Hello and welcome. We are here to do our third lecture on the introduction to corporations. And tonight we're going to talk about the elements of a corporation. What are the things that make a corporation a corporation? What make it that artificial person under the law? As you know, in our previous two lectures, we talked about the nature of a corporation, what were its origins all the way back Rome and then to Great Britain and then now in the United States. We talked about what defines a corporation. And lastly, we talked about that essential element of artificial personhood. The fact that all the way back to Rome, corporations were seen as an artificial person under the law, distinct and separate from those who own it and from those who operate and run it. Then we talked about the types of corporations. What is a business corporation? What's a professional corporation? We talked about public purpose corporations, things like public authorities and municipalities. Then lastly, we talked about not-for-profit corporations. Tonight, we're going to talk about the elements of a corporation. What are its personal principal characteristics as that artificial person under the law? What are some of the comparisons with some of the other forms of business organization? And lastly, we'll wrap up with what are the powers that a corporation can operate under? And after this lecture, we'll do our case, which is a landmark case. It defines that concept of corporate personhood. It's the Dartmouth College case. So let's jump right in. As we discussed before, a corporation is an artificial person under the authority of the laws of the state. It has a distinct existence from that of its owners, its shareholders, its operators, its directors, and its officers. Its duration can either be perpetual, which is forever, or for a defined term of years. It operates as a unit. It has centralized management and republican government, meaning it has a representative form of government, and it operates within the powers and scope that are conferred upon it pursuant to statute. And in New York State, for a business corporation, that's the business corporation law. Okay. What are the principal characteristics of a corporation? What makes a corporation a corporation? It has to have these elements under the business corporation law in order to be a corporation. First and foremost, right out of the box, limited liability. Limited liability, as we said in our first lecture, is that which draws like a magnet the capital into the corporation. It draws money in. Why? Because people know that their investment is limited only to the amount of that investment. So their exposure of whatever money can be collected from them, if the business goes south, if it has financial problems, is only what they invested. You can't come back upon people who have invested in the corporation for more than what their original investment was. That's not true in other forms of business organizations. If you have a sole proprietorship, they can take everything to satisfy those debts. Same thing with a partnership, but with a corporation, all they get is what is in the corporation. They can't go back against its original investors for anything above that amount of money. Then you have entity powers. That's the corporate personhood. And we're going to talk at length about the corporate personhood. You have centralized management. You have continuity of existence. It can go on forever. You have free transferability of interests. You have statutory sources of authority. And lastly, you have a constitutional status. The most important part of a corporation is its aspect of limited liability. Because a corporation is a separate legal entity, its debts and obligations are treated as distinctly its own. The liabilities of a corporation are just that corporate personhood. it does not go back to its shareholders, officers, or directors. Its shareholders and managers are ordinarily, as a result, not liable for corporate indebtedness and are instead only financially responsible for the amount contributed to purchase their shares. So you're limited in your investment. That is why it is such a magnet for capital. People want to invest saying, that's the limit of my exposure, because otherwise their exposure could be greater. And they don't want to have that exposure be greater. In other forms of business organization, as we said, like a sole proprietorship, like a partnership, your limitation on liability is not the same. You can be liable for everything. So if that business gets into trouble, they can go after other personal assets of yours as an investor. You cannot do that as a corporation. It's why corporations were a magnet for money. This limitation on liability came from when the king was giving out charters, he would confer a portion of his sovereign immunity to the corporation, meaning you can't sue the king. Well, if you are giving that sovereign immunity over to the corporation, you can't sue the corporation for anything above its indebtedness. That was an incentive for the king's subjects to invest in these corporations, particularly when he was using them for colonization purposes, and he wanted people to invest in them, and this was an incentive to do that. Well, it caught on so substantially that corporations, even those which were not chartered by the king, especially once they came to the United States, that idea of limited liability was attached. And as a result of that, it was a magnet for capital investment, and it made the corporate form of business organization one of the most attractive and effective in the entire world. Now, there are exceptions to limited liability. One is that the 10 largest shareholders of non-publicly traded corporations, so if it's a publicly traded corporation, this doesn't count, but non-publicly traded corporations are responsible for wages of corporate employees in the event that they're not paying their employees. Now, not liable for other debts, like to other businesses, but only for employees' wages. There's another way that you can avoid limited liability, and that is called piercing the corporate veil. If the corporation is established as a subterfuge, it's not really a corporation. I establish a corporation so I can take trips to Tahiti out of it, and so that I can own all my cars through it, and so that I can own my house in it. And I'm not really using it as a business for profit, but merely as a subterfuge where I can have all these other benefits. It's not really intended for what it's doing. Then people can pierce the corporate veil. Why? Because you're not using that corporation for what it's intended to. It's an element of fraud. It's not really a corporation, so we're not going to give you the protections of that. That's called piercing the corporate veil. Both of those exceptions are extraordinarily rare. Generally, this limited liability concept is the most important aspect of a corporation. It's why people form them in the first place. Corporate personhood. Since the time of their establishment under Roman law, corporations have been held to be and viewed as an artificial person under the law. This concept of corporate personhood means that the corporation is viewed as a separate entity under the law. It's distinct from its shareholders. It's distinct from its managing board of directors. It's distinct from its officers. It's distinct from its employees. It's a separate and distinct person under the law. As a result, a corporation contracts in its own name. It can sue and be sued. It can own property. It can convey property. And it can even be held criminally liable for crimes. Obviously, you can't put it in jail because it's not a natural person, but you can turn around and fine it as a result of criminal activity. Additionally, nearly all of the state's general incorporation statutes unless the article of incorporation expressly limits the corporation's powers, it will deem to have the power to engage in any lawful business activity. So the personhood of the corporation is separate and distinct, and it has powers out of that ability to be a separate person under the law. A corporation has centralized management. Unlike a sole proprietorship, where the sole proprietor, the business owner, makes every decision, runs the business, accepts all the profit, engages in all the losses, that's not the case out of a corporation. Partnerships, they manage the partnership. The partners jointly manage the partnership. They make the decisions jointly as partners. If you have three partners, they vote on it, and whatever two partners agree, they go that direction. That's not the case of a corporation. A corporation has a Republican representative form of government. That means the same as the United States government, whether it be in the state level or on the federal level. It's one of the reasons we do our introduction for the law, because corporations operate the same exact way as our government does. You don't have a direct democracy in the United States. Well, corporations aren't a direct democracy either. What happens is the shareholders elect the board of directors. The board of directors acts just like the Congress or a state legislature, where they make the policy for the corporation. When the board of directors are elected, they are the policy-making entities, and they represent the votes of the boards of directors. The boards of directors are the shareholders. The shareholders elect the board, and then the board acts to pass policy decisions on behalf of the corporation. The shareholders are just like the people who elect their representatives, either be in Washington or in Albany, and the shareholders elect the board of directors who run the policy board of the corporation. One of the roles of the board of directors is to appoint officers. The officers are like an appointed executive. They actually execute the policies of the board of directors. But it is not a direct governance structure. It is centralized management. It goes from the shareholders who elect the board of directors, and then the board of directors who appoint the officers. The board of directors make all the policy, the officers execute that policy. But it is not the shareholders who run the policy. It is the board of directors, and they're elected. That's why it's known as centralized management, because it's not like a partnership where the owners actually provide for the management. It's not like a sole proprietor where the owners operate the management. It is centralized management, meaning it's a selected body that does it. Shareholders have extremely limited power to make management decisions. Some major decisions under the business corporation law or under the corporate articles of incorporation will allow shareholders to vote on certain items. They're generally things like a merger or the dissolution of the corporation. They're not day-to-day operations or major policy decisions that come up in the course of business. They are whether to terminate the corporation, for example, whether to merge it into another corporation. Those types of things sometimes, they don't have to be, they aren't always, but sometimes are given a vote of the shareholders. But most of the time, it's representative government. They vote for the boards of directors, the shareholders do, and then those boards of directors make the decisions for the corporation. Continuity of existence. Corporations can last forever. remember the reason why you had the Romans create the corporation. They wanted a business to last longer than the lifetime of natural people. Well, that's what a corporation can do. It can have a perpetual existence, or it could go for a period of years. That duration is placed within the articles of incorporation before it's filed with the Office of the Secretary of State. Now, any article of incorporation can be later amended. Frequently, those amendments are things that shareholders vote on many of the articles of incorporation, but not always. When you vote on that, you will decide, hey, listen, we want, originally, this corporation was formed for 100 years. We want it to be perpetual. We want it to be forever. You can change that, or vice versa. You know, we're now making something which we know 50 years from now won't exist anymore, so we only want to have our corporation last for 50 years. You can do either one of those things. You can do it for a term of years, or you can do it for forever. And that's the continuity of existence. It can last for longer than the period of a human being. Okay. Now, because it can, the death or the withdrawal or the bankruptcy or incapacity of any shareholder or director or officer does not disable the corporation. Whereas the death of a partner ends the partnership. The death of a sole proprietorship, a sole proprietor ends the business. That is not the case with a corporation. It's next man up. Why? Because it is the corporation that is the person under the law. And once that's formed, you just get a new director. You just get a new shareholder that can replace the old ones. One of the beautiful things about corporations and what has led to the great prosperity in so many aspects of American life is the fact that you have free transferability of interest. That means you can sell your shares in a corporation. That's what the stock market does. It sells shares that you've purchased in other corporations. And as a result of that, anyone, as long as it's not a closed corporation, as long as it's publicly traded, can trade their share, meaning they can sell it to another person as long as that other person is above 21 years of age. So that allows for free transferability. And hopefully you sell it for more than you bought it for. You know, it's the old adage, buy low, sell high. And as a result of this, as long as the person buying it is qualified, they're over 21 years of age, you can sell that stock. Now, because of that, that stock is required to be registered with the secretary of the corporation. Why is that the case? Because stock certificates entitle you to vote. You get to vote for by ownership of the stock entitles you to vote for boards of director members. And the secretary of the corporation needs to know who's voting. So in order for that stock transfer to take place, you got to notify the secretary of the corporation, hey, I'm the new voter because I now own the shares. The stock certificate transference is not anything but evidence of ownership. The true ownership is when it is recorded by the secretary of the corporation. Why? Because they need to know who owns that certificate in order to know who has to cast its vote. So as a result of that, these transferability aren't ever blocked, but the secretary needs to know who it is so they know who can vote its share when it comes up for the next election of the corporation. All corporations, as we talked about in our first lecture, are created under statute. It's a creature of statute. The general corporation laws, pursuant to that 1846 New York State Constitutional Amendment, allowed state legislature, by pursuant to Article 10 of the state constitution, to be able to authorize the Department of State, the Secretary of State, to grant corporate charters as long as all the requirements of the business corporation law are satisfied. So the people have filed the article of incorporation. They've done all the pre-work of incorporating, and we're going to talk about that in our next lecture, what it takes to form a corporation, and they paid all the fees, they've done everything they need to do. You get a corporation. Presto. And as a result of this, all these corporations are a reflection of their statutory authority. The laws of the statute provide what you have to do to form the corporation, to operate the corporation, to keep it in existence, and the corporation's statutory source of authority will specify that the corporation can make its own individual rules for things that aren't in the statute. Those are called bylaws. And it also requires what has to be in an article of incorporation, which is like the constitution of a corporation, and that is filed with the office of Secretary of State at the time that you incorporate. All of these things are laid out in the statute which governs your corporation. And for business corporations, it's the business corporation law of the state of New York. Lastly, in this section, a corporation has constitutional status. Because it's an artificial person under law, it is a person entitled to due process of the laws, a concept which incidentally came out of New York, out of the head of John Jay, means that you have to be able to have an opportunity to be heard if there's a prosecution against you or they're trying to take your property, and a corporation gets that due process. It's also entitled to equal protection of the law under the both the Fifth and the 14th Amendments. It's been held to have similar rights afforded to people, such as protections under the First Amendment. It's freedom of speech, for example, freedom of association. Corporations are entitled to that. It can advertise what it wants. It can say what it wants, as long as it doesn't violate the same rules that you would have for a natural person. You know, you can't say things that are obscene. You can't do things that advocate for, child pornography. The Supreme Court of the United States has put certain limits on First Amendment freedoms, but those same freedoms are limited with natural people as well as corporations. And as long as natural people have that First Amendment right, corporations have been deemed to too. Now, courts have held that a corporation, even though it's an artificial person under the law, is not a citizen of the United States. So it's not entitled to what is called the privileges and immunities of the United States, which are under Article 4 and the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And the reason behind that is because the Supreme Court thought that it was allowable for states to discriminate against other states' chartered corporations. So if the state of New York wants to give favorite status to its corporations as opposed to Delaware corporations, you can't do that with people because that's a violation of the Privileges and Immunities Clause, but you can do it with corporations. And that has been held by the United States Supreme Court to be okay. And similarly, they don't have the right to vote. They're not a natural person. They don't get to vote for public office, which makes sense because similarly that would be casting two votes because of the fact that they operate through their officers, directors, and employees. And as a result that they would just create more and more corporations, you'd have more and more votes. So that makes sense. But at the end of the day, one of the last rights it doesn't have is your right against self-incrimination. If you've ever seen a mafia show where the person who's on trial says, "I refuse to testify based on my right against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment." Well, you know, or they, quote, take the Fifth Amendment, meaning they won't testify against themselves and won't offer testimony against them. Well, the reason for the Fifth Amendment is so that the person doesn't go to jail. Well, you can't put a corporation, which is an idea, in jail. You can fine it, but you can't put it in jail. So as a result, the United States Supreme Court has also held that it doesn't have a Fifth Amendment right for self-incrimination. But all other rights that people enjoy, pretty much it has. Now, how is a corporation different than, say, a partnership or an LLC or sole proprietorship? A partnership is not a separate entity from its owners or the partners. And as a result, each partner is jointly and severally liable for everything in the partnership. Each partner has a voice in the management of the partnership, and all have to agree on the direction that they're going. It's operated by a partnership agreement, and its statutory authority is the New York State Partnership Law. Partnerships are not the same as corporations, and the principal difference is it doesn't have the centralized management. It isn't a separate person under the law. The partnership has no status, only the partners do, and most importantly, doesn't have limited liability, and it's a big difference between them. Now, limited liability companies, which were created in New York State in 1994, are a merger primarily between corporations and partnerships. Partnerships don't have limited liability, but they're easily operated. Corporations have limited liability, but they're expensive, and they're very challenging to operate because you have to have shareholders and boards of directors and officers, a lot of layers, a lot of expense. And so what New York State decided to do is let's try and make a corporation light where it operates nimbly like a partnership, but it has some of the limited liability attributes of a corporation. So its owners, which are known as members, enjoy the limited liability of a corporation, but they manage the liability company. So you don't have that level of centralized management where shareholders vote for directors. The members themselves operate the limited liability company. It's formed by means of an articles of organization, which is akin to an articles of incorporation. But it's managed in accordance with what we call an operating agreement, which is similar to a partnership agreement. It's a much less powerful, but more streamlined and more affordable organization, particularly for a small business. Its statutory authority is the limited liability company law, and it's become a very popular entity because it still has the limited liability without all the fees and the costs and the expenses that a corporation has. Lastly, sole proprietorships, which is the most frequent business organization, most people still have sole proprietorships as the business because they're easily set up. They are very nimble because they don't have any management structure. The owner is the one that controls everything. And they have no statutory requirements for formation or for ownership or for operation. There's no limited liability, but frequently limited liability protections are afforded by means of the purchasing of insurance. So there's insurance coverage to try and take up what limited liability ordinarily would do in a corporation. The owner is the sole manager of the corporation. He decides or she decides what's going to happen with the business completely, and their word is law, and all profits and all losses, the debts as well as the benefits, inure to the benefit or the detriment of the owner. Now, we're going to wrap up with the powers of a corporation, because a corporation, like all business organizations, I like to think of them in terms of cars. Fun kind of analogy. A sole proprietorship is like a Cooper Mini. It's very nimble, very cute. easy to operate, inexpensive, and does well on gas, and it doesn't have a lot of cost, can't carry a lot of things, and can't do a lot of things. But it's nimble, can fit into a small parking space. Sole proprietors is the same thing. They're easy to start. They're easy to close. The management is simple. It's whatever the owner wants to do. It doesn't have much power because not many people want to invest in it. Why? Because it's only your business. And once you start investing, if you want to have any say, you got to form a partnership. And as a result of that, sole proprietors are very small and very nimble. Now, when you get to a partnership, it's like a mid-size car. Can do more things, not quite as economical, but still more nimble than a big corporation. And you know, it kind of does more things than the sole proprietorship, but not as many things as the corporation. The corporation is like a great big Hummer. That great big off-road military vehicle. It guzzles gas, it's expensive, it's big, it's powerful. It can do all kinds of things. It can go off-roading. It can drive in the middle of a river. It's a great vehicle, but it ain't cheap. And it can't fit in a small parking space. So it's got the beauty of largeness. It's got the power of largeness, but it doesn't have the nimbleness of smallness. And that's what a corporation is. A corporation's very powerful, very structured, very big organization. It has a number of statutory powers. Let's go through them. What can a corporation do? Well, because it's a artificial person under the law, a separate entity, it can transfer property, it can buy property, it can own it in its own name, it can sell it can lend money, it can borrow money. Borrowing money by a corporation is frequently called a bond. It can buy and sell securities. It can invest in another corporation. It can become a partner. It can contract with other entities. It can compensate its employees, can pay them. It can participate in other ventures. Most articles of incorporation also give it what is called a residuary power. The residuary power is what we like to call a catch-all. It says that in addition to any of the specified powers contained in the Articles of Incorporation or in the state statute, it has all other powers that a corporation may have that are legal. So it basically is any power as long as the legislature hasn't said it can't do it. That's a big one. It also has the power to make contributions. It can make charitable contributions, and it can make political contributions. Its charitable contributions don't have a dollar limit, but as a board of directors, your charitable contributions are balanced against your obligation to maximize the value of the corporation for your shareholders. So if you're giving all your money away to some charity, and maybe your shareholders don't support that, and they say, give me the money. It's why I invested in you. You're not a charity. If I wanted to invest in a charity, I would have done that. I want you to make money. Your corporate title is and charter says that you're to operate a business for profit, make money for me. But they are legally entitled to make charitable contributions. They tend to be smaller based on the proportion of the business. Obviously, Microsoft gives more money away than the local hardware store that incorporates. Why? Because they have a lot more assets. But as a percentage of what they own, as a percentage of what they make, it's not a great amount, because their charter, their mission is to make a profit. Now, they can also give political contributions. Those do have a cap. In New York State, a corporation may give only $5,000, despite its size, to all political entities combined. So if you give $500 to X candidate, you only can give $4,500 to all other candidates. And that's in an election cycle. It also allows you to have a guarantee, and that give guarantees for a corporate purpose, that you will do X, and I guarantee that I'll do X. That has to be authorized by a vote of 2/3 of the shareholders to be able to give a guarantee. A corporation other than a professional corporation cannot practice law or medicine or any other profession. They have to be a professional corporation in order to do that. They can indemnify and compensate their directors and officers, and they can also acquire their own shares. They can buy them back from their shareholders so long as their shareholders agree. That's all we have for tonight. We're going to be on to our case soon, and we're going to see you next week. Thanks so much.